Well, I think most of you know that I've been working at Miracle Hill Rescue Mission nearby. Actually, I think tomorrow will be my two-month anniversary there, so not a real long time yet. I'm a counselor there. If you're not familiar with their ministry, it's a gospel rescue mission, so I'm primarily dealing with homeless men, although there is a women's program as well, although I'm not personally involved with that. A lot of what I've been doing is I've been doing a lot of the check-in process for guys that are coming in, and just kind of the initial interview process, getting to know them, sharing the gospel with them through that. And even in these last couple months, there have just been a lot of really sobering events that have come about as a result of that. And frankly, what it has done for me is just made me very thankful for my family and very thankful for my father. But just to give you a little bit of a background, of course, you know, homelessness is not a one-size-fits-all sort of category, but I think I can say, generally speaking, that of the men that come to us, a lot of them have addiction issues, some starting in their early teens even, and a lot of them have been devastated by that. And of course, Miracle Hill has some programs for that and so forth, but sometimes we kind of guide them into various recovery programs that they can pursue, especially those that are Christ-centered. So there's that issue. A lot of times guys will come to us not having completed high school. I would guess maybe half of them would perhaps have a high school diploma or a GED, but a number of them do not. There have been a few that have come to us actually with college degrees and beyond, but for the most part, I would say there's certainly a lack in education. But the biggest thing that has really stood out to me is just the level of dysfunction within most of their families. And for many, just a non-existent father or one that they had a poor relationship with, or perhaps didn't even know him at all, which again comes back to, well, I'll come back to that in a little bit. Now, I would like to say this. One thing that has really been striking to me that I have to constantly remind myself of is, if you're like me, probably if you see someone who's, you know, out panhandling or with a sign or something saying, please give me food, or just out walking around and not looking so good or smelling so good, you probably are tempted to, you know, divert your eyes and cross the street or do something else. And one thing that I am realizing more and more is, regardless of a person's condition, regardless of the degradation to which sin has brought someone, every person still contains the image of God within them. Every person is still made within the image of God. And despite our flawed condition, despite our sinfulness, there still is an inherent worth and value in each person that lives. Because, of course, the fall has certainly marred our condition, has marred the image of God, but has not destroyed it. Now, to give you just some sobering events here in the last, even within the last 2 months that I've been there, and I'll try not to give incriminating details, but even in the amount of time that I've been there, you know, several guys have had to go to the hospital. We've had threats of suicide. There have been people that have been left our property and been arrested. There's been criminal activity that's gone on. I think the saddest thing that has happened, well, certainly the saddest thing that has happened within the last week, actually, was a particular client that I do trust was saved. I remember looking at his file, and he had written out a extensive salvation testimony and had a real serious history of addiction before coming to the mission, and somehow or another got caught up in a immoral relationship with a woman outside the mission, and because of everything that was going on there, was dismissed from us. And then I found out, I believe it was last Sunday actually, that about a day or two after that, he had overdosed on drugs and had actually passed away as of last Sunday night. So, you know, I say all that just to realize sometimes, I think it's easy sometimes to get caught up in our problems and our struggles, and I'm not saying that they're not real, but it just gives me perspective that a lot of the things that we struggle with, there's a lot of people out there that have things a lot worse. But in dealing with these guys and with the various issues that they face, as I said, I think there's just a lot of family issues, a lot of family dysfunction. And really, where that has brought me, the reason I bring that up, and the reason why I do think this is applicable to us as children, is that I think many times we can lose perspective, we can focus on the wrong things, we can get frustrated with our situation in life, and for me to say now, I'm thankful for my dad, I'm thankful for my upbringing, I'm thankful for a church that preached the gospel, and none of those things are to say that my church was perfect. It certainly was not. That my dad was perfect, he certainly was not, nor would he claim to be. And if you rewound my life about 20 years, there were times I was frustrated with him. There were times I was frustrated perhaps with limitations or restrictions or feeling like, he was being too strict with me or something. But, to come to this point and just to realize that, I'm just very thankful for him. I'm thankful that he loved me. I'm thankful that he was concerned about me. I don't know how many of you know this. My parents actually were divorced when I was 10. So there were a lot of issues, and they were both remarried when I was about 13. So there were definitely a lot of struggles in conjunction with that. There were a lot of struggles that I went through in junior high and high school, and frustrations that I had with him and with my mom. But at this point, like I said, to see these guys coming in day after day after day, and just to realize, my dad did love me. He took care of me. He provided for me. He wasn't perfect. Even just to think that for most of us have had, educational choices. When I was starting into college, Liz and I actually went to Maranatha around the same time. I think we overlapped by a couple of years. But when I went to college, that first year I paid for a lot of things myself. And then you may remember from about 15, 20 years ago, the big Y2K computer crisis. I don't think anything ever actually happened from that. But I'm thankful for it because my dad made a lot of money for a couple of years. And I actually made it all the way through college debt-free. And, that was in large part because my dad worked hard and was very diligent. And that, that freed me to be able to pursue other things, to be able to pursue seminary studies without necessarily having a lot of debt hanging over my shoulders. So, all that to say, I'm very thankful for my heritage, thankful for my father. And I think probably what I'm saying would resonate with most of you. I think most of us probably come from a similar type background. And I think the tendency and the temptation is sometimes, especially in high school, and I know I face this to some extent, and I know a lot of young people did, it's just to kind of focus on the restrictions and the things that we're frustrated with and feeling like, well, I don't have as much freedom as, my neighbor does or my friend does or whatever. But really the focus, my challenge would just be to be thankful and to lift our focus beyond those things and to a higher plane. Now, I would also like to say, and of course, part of what I'm saying here would assume a godly heritage, which I think probably would be indicative of most of us here. But I realize that may not be the case for everyone. And even as I was speaking in chapel in the mission on Friday, someone had brought up a prayer request about Father's Day. I know that some of the guys there are fathers and perhaps, are separated from their kids or because of these past addiction issues or criminal issues, perhaps, don't have access to their children as much as they would like. And so sometimes days like this can be a painful thing. But I also was reflecting on what we were discussing last week in our Samuel study. I would argue, I think you can make a pretty good case that the godliest person in the book of Samuel is Jonathan. I think you can make a pretty good case for that. And who was Jonathan's father? It was Saul. It's just interesting to me as we were discussing that last week, as we were wrapping up that study, of course, Eli had his major failures. Unfortunately, Samuel did as well. David did as well. And Saul was certainly no role model father. But I would argue, You know, the Jonathan is certainly one of the high point characters in the book, and I do think that would show us that even if our past was not all that we wish that it were, that certainly we can still rise above that with the Lord's help and through the Lord's grace. So again, I am thankful for my heritage. I certainly do covet your prayers in my ministry and what I do. I'm starting to move into kind of more of a counseling role. There's kind of a combination of counselor, caseworker sort of things that I do. But certainly need the Lord's grace and the Lord's wisdom for dealing with men and trying to help them with the various issues that they face. But just to give you one last anecdote about this idea of keeping a proper perspective. Last week was a pretty challenging week, of course, as I said, with one of the gentlemen passing away last weekend, and then just a lot of weird situations that come up. I've remarked that it seems like the mission can go from zero to crazy in like, you know, 30 seconds or something. So it's, you know, you never quite know. You know, I can be sitting there, you know, reading a counseling book in my office, and then, you know, all sorts of crazy things happen and I can't get back to it the rest of the day or whatever. But one blessing from this past week was there's a gentleman that I checked in and a pastor brought by, and apparently was in the Army, had a major accident there. And when he came in, one of the stipulations, because it's a rescue mission, not necessarily like an assisted living facility or whatever, so, you know, the people that do come in have to be able to physically care for them, for themselves. And he came in, he was, you know, hobbling along on a crutch. Unfortunately, our elevator is broken at the moment, and all the dorms are on the second floor. And I asked him, you know, are you going to be able to make it up the stairs? And he said, oh, yes, I'll be fine. Don't worry about me. And, you know, I'm looking at him, and part of me is like, you know, I don't know if this is the right place for him just from a physical standpoint. Is he going to be able to walk around and function like he needs to? And he's walking around in this crutch. His leg is very contorted. I'm not exactly sure what the issue is there with him. And, you know, I'm checking him in thinking, I wonder if I should be doing this. And it's probably the sort of thing I would have talked to our director about, but he was actually on vacation last week, which was probably all the crazy stuff happened while he was gone. So I just made the decision to go with it and see if he could make it for a few days. As far as I know, he's still there. But anyway, later that day, I saw him, and we asked him how things were going, and I think he'd already had to go up and down the stairs once or twice. And he said, it's never been better. Things have never been better. And, you know, of all the people in the world that I could see just complaining and, you know, having every reason to have a pity party, this particular client really rebuked me with how good his attitude was and just reminded me again that a lot of things really are a matter of perspective and lifting our eyes beyond just the external circumstances we have and looking to the Lord. So, you know, again, if you have that godly heritage, I cherish that. Thank the Lord for that. Thank your mother and father for that, and live in light of that. And again, if you don't, then certainly remember the example of Jonathan and ask the Lord to help you to set a new bar and to set a new example for future generations going forward.
Well, our opening text this morning will be very easy to find because it is the first chapter of the Bible. Turn with me, please, as we begin to Genesis chapter 1, and I'll be reading some from this chapter here in a moment. Genesis chapter 1. Falls to me to give a word of encouragement to the fathers in the congregation today. And of course, Andrew encouraged the children to be thankful for their fathers. He pointed out that whether or not our children realize it, there is an enormous difference for good that is made in your life through a solid father growing up in a solid family. There is this discussion about nature versus nurture that is hard to settle as to what it is that shapes an individual's life, whether it's something that comes out from inside of him, or whether it's his environment and how he is shaped by outside influences. I think biblically the answer to that question is really both. That on one level, our nature, both being made in the image of God, as well as our sin, has a huge shaping influence on our lives. And the grace of God can overcome sin and can overcome whatever problems have been produced by our environment through Christ from within, through the ministry of the Holy Spirit. He gives us God's own nature, and he begins to work and sanctify and shape us to be what he wants us to be. And yet the Bible clearly indicates that our influences, things, people, circumstances outside of us certainly have a big impact on us as well. And that impact can be for good or it can be for bad. And particularly for those who are growing up with fathers who know and love Jesus Christ and who are striving to point their children in that direction, that kind of nurturing is an extremely powerful thing, an extremely powerful instrument in the hands of God, and it certainly is something to be thankful for. You really have no idea how far along in life you are just because of being in a family that, A, has a father, and being in a family that has a father who knows Christ. And only over the course of your life and really into eternity will you be able to know the difference that has made. As I thought about what Andrew was sharing with the children, what I should say to the fathers, it struck me that the same basic theme really applies to us. And so this morning, what I want to say to the fathers and to myself as a father is that I want to be and I need to be thankful for my children. I need to be, and I need to, and I want to be thankful for them, enjoy them, and delight in them. And just as there is a huge difference for good that can be made by fathers in the lives of children, there is a huge difference for good that God makes in your life through the children he gives you. It works both ways. It really does. Somebody says, well, why should I be thankful? What are some reasons to enjoy this and to delight in it? Because after all, we find ourselves working hard on behalf of our children. It is not always easy to guide them, to be an example to them, to deal with them through different struggles that they go through, to be consistent with them, to make decisions about exactly how to teach them and how to discipline. These are very hard things, and they are challenging, and they certainly have aspects that are burdensome and that are overwhelming. And it's like Andrew was saying, often we need a perspective change. Liz was really saying the same thing this morning in Sunday school, wasn't she? You can either choose to focus on the unpleasant things, the difficult things, or you can say, now, from God's viewpoint, really what's going on here? And what is this positive, Christ-filled perspective that really would have a way of lifting up my heart and really helping me enjoy this if I would view it the way God views it? Well, why be thankful for our children? Genesis chapter 1, very first chapter in the Bible, gives us the first answer to that question. If you want to know, if I want to know how God views children as a blessing. This is the first reason for you and I to be thankful, is because children are a blessing from God. I'd like to read from Genesis chapter 1, starting at verse 27, and down to the end of the chapter. It says, so God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. And God blessed them, and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it and have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the heaven and over every living thing that moves on the earth. And God said, behold, I have given you every plant yielding seed that is on the face of all the earth, and every tree with seed in its fruit. You shall have them for food. And every beast of the earth, every bird of the heavens, and everything that creeps the earth, everything that has the breath of life, I have given every green plant for food. And it was so. And God saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good. And there was evening, and there was morning, the sixth day. This is such a foundational passage for so many areas of life. And my job this morning is not to expound this text. In fact, we're going to be hitting on some other passages. This will be more of a topical message this morning. But our first thought I am extracting from this key passage. And it's a point that I try to make whenever somebody is moving toward marriage and we're doing premarital counseling, and I try to encourage them about their viewpoint toward children. And one of the first things we consider is this passage, and particularly Genesis chapter 1 and verse 28. There is a command there that says, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. And those are imperative verbs. Those are commands. You could describe them as duties, and it makes all the sense in the world why God would have told, especially Adam and Eve, that it was their duty to multiply and fill the earth. After all, they were only the only two people on the face of the earth, and God had commanded them, as really the whole purpose for existing, to exercise dominion over the whole globe. How can two people possibly exercise dominion over the entire earth? The only way, practically speaking, that would happen is if they start having children. You've got to have a substantial number of people to be able to even populate the earth, much less rule over it, and particularly given the curse to make it a flourishing and a fruitful place and subdue it to the glory of God, like this passage says. So clearly this is a responsibility, and people need to view it as an obligation before the Lord, and to whatever degree that they are physically capable and to whatever degree that they have the capacity to rear those children for the Lord, they need to view this as a responsibility. However, that is not the emphasis that I would want to put on it, nor that God puts on it. And what's sometimes missed in talking about that verse is how it begins. This all runs together, starting at verse 28 at the beginning, and God blessed them, and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply. Really, that's all one thought. In other words, a part of the blessing is the imperative to be fruitful and multiply. The very first time it is mentioned in the Bible, it is presented in the context of a blessing, as if the Lord says, yes, you need to do this. It's vital in order to exercise dominion over the earth. But here's how I'm presenting it to you. This is a part of my goodness in your life that you get to do this. That's how he views it. I want to bless you. And you say, well, how's God going to bless me? Well, give me food to eat. Well, he talks about that. Provide for my needs. He does that. He talks here about the food that he supplied for them and so forth. But even before that, he says, I want to bless you, and here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to give you the capacity to procreate and to see yourself reproduced in these other creatures and to see my image in you also reproduced and to bring more people through you into this world that can exist to accomplish the purposes for which I created the human race, that can contribute to this grand goal of glorifying me through exercising dominion over the world. My point is, the first mention of procreation, even before it is a command, it is presented as a blessing. It is presented as something that is good. And if you look around at whatever children that God has given you, If you look around at whatever experience you have with them, I am sure that there are multiple ways, no matter how challenging it is, no matter even how heartbreaking it is, that you would be able to say, you know what, there are good things happening in my life through this. There are joys that I have experienced through this relationship that really I would not have experienced in any other way. This is a blessing from God. That's how we want to view it. That's the first and kind of foundational reason. But as we go on here to these other thoughts, we're looking at what are some of these specific blessings. We could list many more, I'm sure. These are some that came to mind and specific passages that are making this point. In general, one reason to thank the Lord for children is because they are a blessing. But secondly, it is because children provide a unique opportunity to extend your influence. Children provide a unique opportunity to extend your influence. Go with me to a kind of twin passage on this point to Genesis 1, and that's Psalm 127. And maybe you could have anticipated that I would go here, Psalm 127, to make the point that children provide a unique opportunity to extend your influence. And I'd like to read from Psalm 127, verses 3 to 5. These are the words of God about this topic. Behold, children are a heritage from the Lord, the fruit of the womb, a reward. There's that positive perspective. There's that idea of children as a gift, as a blessing. And in fact, let's think about the word heritage. That maybe isn't entirely clear to us in English what the Lord is getting at. You could translate it just as well, inheritance. And this is the opposite of what we normally think of with an inheritance, right? An inheritance, we tend to think of, well, that's what the parents leave to the children to have and enjoy after the parents die. So parents leave an inheritance for the children. That's all well and good, but that's not what this verse is saying. This verse is saying your children from God are your inheritance, or a big part of it. This is what, as it were, God has bequeathed to you as a blessing to enter into and to delight in. This is an inheritance for the parents. You say, why? Well, that's where verses 4 to 5 come in. It says, like arrows in the hand of a warrior are the children of one's youth. Blessed is the man who fills his quiver with them. He shall not be put to shame when he speaks with his enemies in the gate. In this passage, the blessing is pictured in terms of arrows. That's the image. So there's a target out there. There's something you want to hit or accomplish. You cannot always go there yourself. And so, like this arrow, you have the opportunity to shoot them in that direction so that more is accomplished. That's the image. That's the illustration. The concrete reality that he has in mind is what it says at the end. He shall not be put to shame when he speaks with his enemies in the gate. And in this ancient culture, he's thinking particularly of the role of sons. In the gate, that would be like the county courthouse, the city courthouse. This is the place where legal matters were conducted, where financial matters were conducted. And particularly in old age or in difficult circumstances, this father has these boys to stand there in that place, working things out for him and providing legal and financial protection for him. Again, it's kind of the other side of the inheritance. It's not just that the parents leave something for the children, but that the children actually have a role to stand up for their parents in society. That's the original setting here. We know that this applies to other kinds of ministries as well. It is not just that the children have that opportunity to extend the influence of their parents in society and even to bring back some of them for the benefit of their parents. But there are all other kinds of influences, and we would hope that particularly in terms of the spiritual dimension, that's really our burden, that our children would be able to extend our influence beyond the limited ways that we individually can do. And the Bible is all about this, right? This opportunity to extend our influence. It is what motivates us to take seriously the responsibility to bring up our children in the ways of God. This is Old and New Testament. One of the great examples of this is in the life of Abraham. And this is one of the reasons God gives that he chose Abraham to accomplish this purpose. I have chosen him that he may command his children and his household after him to keep the way of the Lord by doing righteousness and justice, so that the Lord may bring to Abraham what he has promised. It's like this whole nation of Israel that's beginning there. The Lord says, the purpose for which I've chosen Abraham is not just to bless him personally, but to provide through him all these other people that are going to carry on these values of the covenant. And so it's no surprise that when the nation forms up and God is preparing them for their role in the world in Deuteronomy chapter 6, right after he gives them their core confession of faith that Yahweh is the one and only God, right after he gives them what is the chief commandment toward him, to love him with all the heart, it's just like he moves seamlessly from that primary relationship, love God. It's like the next verse, without making any kind of transition or explanation, it just says, you shall teach these things diligently to your children. Talk of them no matter what you're doing. Let this word just dominate your family life and view your family really as the immediate sort of first base for propagating these things. Proverbs has these things to say along these lines. In the fear of Yahweh, one has strong confidence, and his children have a refuge. The righteous who walks in his integrity, blessed are his children after him. The father of the righteous will greatly rejoice. He who fathers a wise son will be glad in him. When you see something of the truth of the gospel, the teaching of Scripture, the Word of God being displayed in the life of your children, small though it might be, and although you may wish and pray for much more, when you see something of the truth of God worked out in their lives, this is a source of great joy. Children are a blessing. We're to be thankful for them because of the opportunity for that kind of influence. I was at a wedding yesterday. Family was at the wedding for a cousin of my wife's. And like my wife, I got a little teary-eyed for different reasons. One is because when you're at a wedding, you think back to your own. And if you were to watch my wedding video, you would see that there's a point at which I totally lose it. And I was not expecting to. And I don't remember a lot of specific things that were said at my wedding. We just celebrated our 23rd anniversary. But I do remember a few things. And one is, my father, who's here today, thank the Lord for him, talking to us about the main thing that he and my mom try to inculcate into us was to put Jesus Christ first in our lives. And when he said those words, I just started bawling because I knew the heart from which they came, and I knew the life that reflected that commitment, and I desired the same thing for myself. And whatever love for Christ I have under God by his grace, it was mediated to me largely through a mom and dad who did the same. Now, there's no talking about this without recognizing the painful reality that often that influence for Christ is not received. Here we are talking about the blessing of parenting being this opportunity to extend your influence for Christ, and you're trying the best you know how to do that, and things just do not seem to be going in that direction. And I don't in any way want to minimize the difficulty of that. And yet I want to say along these lines that even that sad experience has enormous potential for influence. I was remembering what Robert Hirsch shared with us a couple weeks ago when he was talking to us, preaching to us from the parable of the prodigal son. And he was having us focus not on the human characters and what we could learn for our lives from the prodigal or the other brother, but he was asking the question, what does this reflect about God? And here were the 3 points to his message. Here's what we see about God in this story. First of all, the Father shows patient endurance of ungrateful sinners. We see that when the father, instead of just preaching to his son when he came, insisting on the inheritance, he actually gave in to that request. And it's kind of mind-boggling, and yet that is very reflective of what happens with God and sinful people. He doesn't just quash people and go after them immediately. Sometimes he will just let them sin. He will let them abuse his creation. He will let them take advantage and waste the blessings that he has given them. God puts up with a lot of junk from the human race. Instead of just destroying us once for all, part of his fatherly heart is that he patiently endures with ungrateful sinners. That's what one of the things we see reflected in that story. And when a father and a mother have a prodigal son, here is part of the good way to think about this. This gives me an opportunity to display to that child patient endurance toward ungrateful sinners. And you have no idea how God may use that in their lives over time and in everybody else's life who is watching. And if you have spoken with prodigal children, this is one of the things, I'm thinking of an example right now of something that was shared with me in a situation like that by the child. And he says, no matter what, even the bad choices that he would be making, he knows his parents love him, and his parents have been incredibly gracious through the whole ordeal. This is part of extending influence for good, and the message of the gospel is putting up with ungrateful children. What do we see in the life of the prodigal himself as he comes back and seeks restoration with the father? Robert pointed out that another thing about God we see is his compassionate forgiveness of repentant sinners. His compassionate forgiveness of repentant sinners. And here again is a way that parents in these hard situations are able to display the glory of God, the character of God, to extend influence for God, is by having that kind of open-heartedness, willingness to forgive, compassion. If you think about this crisis there in Charleston, isn't that the thing that has stood out about those people? Anybody could get angry. Anybody is going to hurt. Anybody could have a riot. Anybody could lash out and retaliate.